Accession number 30633, Mr. James Farquharson, Reel 9. Now, what else were you studying or doing?
At Chirivenham, subjects which I remember, we did, of course, were aircraft recognition, which was a major subject. I mean, there was a great deal of work on that.
Now, how did you learn? I mean, what were the methods they taught you?
The methods they taught us were very largely that there were published black and white silhouettes of our planes and, as far as possible, of enemy planes. And we just learnt what they were, and I think our instructor would put one up on the board and say, "What is that?" And that sort of thing. We had to give the right answer. And also, throughout most of the war, I think there was a very good glossy magazine, Aircraft Recognition, which came out once a month or something like that. I've got quite a pile of them now, and they were always avidly read by everybody and gave you the latest news, latest discoveries about developments of new German planes and things like that, and perhaps a first release of information about a new plane of ours. So that was an important subject. Military law was another subject, of course, which loomed large.
How far did you go into military law?
That I simply can't say now, except that I think we were referred to the manual of military law and that sort of thing. These were lectures. Current affairs, we were expected to keep up with the news, and as far as I remember, we had to be at a moment's notice, if you were called upon to give a lecturette for 10 minutes, you had to stand up and speak. We were taught aspects of leadership, of course, welfare, dealing with troops and that sort of thing.
Well, what about aspects of leadership? Do you remember any much about that?
No, I can't remember anything about it at all now, I'm afraid.
But these are just lecture topics?
Yes, yes. And we're not just one-offs. I mean, there were a series of lectures. Much studying of the drill book and amending the drill book and things like that. As a sideline, all OCTUs were descended upon by Savile Row tailors who put up little huts on the edge of the camp, hoping that the cadets would go and order their officers' kit. And we all did. I used Walters of Oxford. They made my greatcoat, which cost £27, I remember, very expensive. And my service dress, beautiful pair of brown boots, a hard cap, of course, all the things that an officer needed, in fact. I think we got a grant or something, a certain amount of money to pay for this. But on the whole, one had to pay a good deal more because you went for the rather superior things. that's about all, really, I've got to say about subjects that were taught. But alas, I have absolutely no memory at all of what was taught precisely.
Now, how long were you there for? You went there in what?
I went down about the 25th of January, 1942.
And when did you leave?
And I left on the 13th of August, 42, and a month before that, cadets became very superior. In their final month, they were allowed to put a white band around their caps and to carry a swagger stick. And we considered to be sort of halfway to being officers. And that coincided with our move from Chirivenham to Tonfannai Camp, Tawin, in West Wales, because Chirivenham had been given to the American Army to be a military university. So we actually were commissioned from Wales, and I've got among my things there the actual pay book, or whatever it was, that was issued to an officer, with a little slip stapled into it, saying that it was issued to me on the 13th of August, 1942.
And what happened when you got to Tauin? Did you actually complete your training there? Or was
yes, it just, I mean, we went through the standard final month of training.
Was there anything special about that?
The only special thing I remember was the white band around the hat and the swagger stick, I'm afraid. And I think we had a little more liberty. One of the pleasant things there was that recreational training on, I think, Wednesday afternoons, you could form up into parties to do things and requisition transport as far as it was available. And we would go off, perhaps 10 or a dozen of us, to climb a mountain, Kadar Idris or something like that. That was always most enjoyable.
So anything else about the final month?
No, I think nothing else beyond the fact that it was always raining. Then I suppose I had some leave on being commissioned and was then posted to a regiment.
Now, which one?
The 67th, I think it was, Light Anti-Aircraft Regiment.
And where were they?
The regimental headquarters, I suspect, was probably in somewhere like Torquay, but I was sent to Prawl Point. Now,
how do you spell that? Sorry.
Prawle Point, which was a headland. Funnily enough, there's a minor headland alongside, which is much better known, called Start Point. And we were right up high above, immensely high cliffs. And I was, my...
What was it near? I don't know where they are.
It was on the Devon coast between, large places, between Torquay and Plymouth, we'll say, but smaller places close to Kingsbridge and Salcombe.
So you got there in, what, September would it be?
Late August, perhaps, something like that. And...
Now, was there a name of a battery that you...
Yes. Now, my battery, I can't remember the number of the battery. It was a pretty run-down organisation. The battery headquarters was in Dartmouth. And... let me think. Yes. The headquarters was in a rather fine house in Dartmouth. The battery commander was called Dennis Murphy.
A major, I presume.
Major, yes. Very dapper. Coal black hair, black moustache, service dress, riding breeches, and he had a subaltern who dressed in a rather similar way, whose name I can't remember now. But their interest was more in social life than in military things, I think. There was always gatherings of at lunchtime. You'd go around and have a drink in the battery headquarters mess, which was in this large private house. And there'd be a little posse of wrens came up to have drinks with us and that sort of thing. And I was, in fact, posted to a troop which was based on Prawl Point. Now, I'm getting a bit confused because... that must have been the regimental headquarters, perhaps, because the local headquarters under which I was directly was at Stokenham Manor, which was quite close to Prawl Point on the main road along there. The trouble is that I went back there with my next regiment, oddly enough, and I perhaps confused the two occasions. But anyhow, on that occasion, when I was posted to a troop, I found that the troop commander was a Lieutenant Boswell. And within about a week of my arriving there, it was a hutted camp. I mean, and I forget, I think in those days we had four guns. And they were...
Bofors.
Bofors guns, yes. And I suppose our principal role there was to defend an RAF radar station. There were big masts about half a mile from our hutted camp. And after about a week, Boswell was sent on leave, and I found myself troop commander.
Now, what was your role as troop commander? Tell us what a troop commander did.
Well, a troop commander really just had to look after the four gun detachments, visit them, receive ACIs or orders from headquarters and so on, and see that everything was battle-worthy, and nothing much else. I'd go into Stokenham to battery headquarters on a motorbike that I was issued with a BSA, a big motorbike, I remember, and things were fairly quiet there.
Now, how did you get on with the men? You know, this is your first real command, isn't it?
Yes. I think I got on perfectly all right with them. I was not a martinet. I was, I think, reasonable with them, and they accepted me, and I think I was just a sort of chap who came round and saw them from time to time. And I had, a troop sergeant who would have been in charge of the headquarters hut, in which there would have been a very small headquarters detachment, and probably a man with a water truck, a gunner, who would go and fetch tanks of water for us, and a dispatch rider with a motorbike, a troop clerk who would be permanently in the hut and didn't do very much else. And the only events that I remember there were occasional German raids. It was a period when we were already assembling landing craft in Salcombe Estuary, which was an enormous inland patch of water, in which these, as far as I remember, these landing craft were moored, tied side to side, a sort of strip of about six of them here and there, and dotted all over the place. And in those days, I think they were Focke Wulf fighters, used to come in over the shore, go inland, swing round, and bomb these landing craft on their way out over the coast. And they did quite a lot of damage, I think. And one of the tasks I remember, perhaps the most interesting one, was that I had to take one of my guns, take it down to Slapton Sands, which became famous later on for an American disaster. But this was a rather like the Chesil Beach in Dorset. It was a strip of beach with a lagoon behind, so it was ran across, but with water on both sides, and was, of course, right down low, naturally at sea level, whereas we were otherwise very high up on high ground. And there we were ordered to take one gun, which was known as the Gypsy gun, and our task was to move that gun backwards and forwards up the beach, put it ready for action on the beach, in the hope that one day the Germans would actually fly over the gun. And I don't think they ever did. I don't think we ever fired a shot in anger. But it was a diversion anyhow. It was something better than just sitting around doing nothing. And we had one or two excitements. You could walk from this headquarters hut only, I forget, 200 or 300 yards or something to the cliff top and look right out to sea. And certainly on one night, I remember there was a great battle with E-boats, which we could see going on. I mean, tracer flashing about across the sea, our own motor torpedo boats or something. But that didn't directly affect us at all. It was just something we saw. And on one occasion, we did fire in anger once.
Tell me about that. What do you remember? What would you do? I mean, what was the process of firing? Or
well,
were you warned beforehand? Or?
To begin with, I was forgetting, of course, every gun had an allocated time during the day to come out of action for maintenance. And then when the guns were ready for action, they would have a clip of rounds over the loading tray of the gun, the detachment will be there handy. And the moment they got the alarm, we had a telephone, of course, a field telephone system. The moment the alarm went, they manned the gun and stood by and watched for a target. And as far as I remember, it must have been, I think it was a bow fighter. It was one of our planes at night flew over, and they let fly at it. I'm glad to say they didn't hit it. We never hit anything all through the war. They fired one shell hit the lattice work of one of the radar masts and cut it. And there was an absolute panic that the whole thing would therefore fold over and crash to the ground. But it didn't, and they managed to get somebody up there to screw in a plate to join the two bits together again. But we were not at all popular, naturally, with the RAF for that. In the autumn, let me get this right. I'm getting so confused between two regiments now. It must have been this regiment. Yes, I suppose we were moved from Ball Point to Dartmouth, where we had then two guns on each side of the harbour, two on the east side on high ground, and the two on the west side in what was called Coronation Park, which was a little bit of flat ground slightly upstream from the town and overlooked by the Naval College, slightly raised up behind. And I think we probably were encamped, living under canvas there. And that is when, the battery, I suppose the battery headquarters moved from Stokenham to Dartmouth. And that's why Spud Murphy, as he was called, was reigning supreme in I can almost remember the name of the house. It was a pleasant existence. Nothing much happened.
What was the officer's mess like? Can you give us a sort of picture of it?
Oh, I don't really remember an officer's mess. I remember that house. It was, but I never fed in it or anything. It was just a pleasant house, as might be any domestic dwelling of a rather high standard. And I suppose there were only three officers, I think, there in the headquarters. There would have been the battery captain and the battery subaltern. And so they would have fed in the dining room, I suppose. And for the rest, we all stood around and had drinks or what have you in the sitting room or something like that. It was a house that overlooked the harbour, and one could occasionally see naval vessels going in and out. And it's all coming back bit by bit. One of my guns was at Dittisham, which was about a mile up the estuary.
Dittisham?
D-I-double-T-I-S-H-A-M, Dittisham. And to get to it, one had to go a long way round, because between the town and Dittisham, there was a side valley, a branch of the estuary, which went up quite a way, I mean, a mile or so. And so it was quite a long trip round on a motorbike to get to the gun at Dittisham. And I can remember that would have been in October, because I can remember well there was a most appalling frost then. It was very early winter, and the discomfort, you might call it, of riding the motorbike. My shins got almost frozen riding the motorbike in this cold weather. And there the guns, there had been only one gun on Coronation Park, was one day it was taken out of action for maintenance. And I think we fired a practice shell or something to test the gun after maintenance. And anyhow, the gun went off by mistake, certainly, when they were putting it back in action, and jolly nearly hit the gun on the opposite shore, high up, about 200 feet or something above the harbour. And there was quite a fuss and bother about that. And I remember that Spud Murphy, I suppose it was, made light of it and rang the naval officer, NOIC, the naval officer in charge, and said, your chaps are a bit trigger happy, aren't they, trying to shoot at my gunners? And the Navy more or less accepted it. They had fired their Ehrlichan gun or something, and that they were responsible for this misdemeanor. We got away with it completely. Then, later on, in November or early December, we were taken out of action from there to go to practice camp.
That's in November?
Yes. And the practice...
Now, where was that?
The practice camp was at Watchet, North Somerset, on the Bristol Channel, where there was a firing camp.
And what do you remember about that?
I remember one particular episode when the gun again was fired in error. We had, among other things, your gun was, or the gun, I mean, it wasn't our own guns, of course. There was I think there was a permanent stock of guns there. And one of the things that, get the exact expression, snap action or something, the gun crew, a minimum detachment, that's what it was called, just the two gun layers and the number four, the firing man, stood back about 25 yards, I suppose, behind the gun. And when the sergeant, the detachment commander, shouted, plane, those men had to run to the gun, leap on, train the gun, on a drogue being towed by a plane past, of course. We always had targets of that sort. And on that occasion, the number four tripped over the girders of the gun, fell flat on his face on the firing pedal, and set the gun off. And it fired five rounds of rapid fire or something like that, which again was rather unfortunate, did no damage at all. And I don't know what the outcome of that was. It was just treated as a misfortune. I think there were no formalities involved. But I'm afraid my such memories that I have very often are of frivolous things like that, rather than the serious business. And then when we'd finished with practice camp, which probably lasted 3 weeks, I think that was the usual sort of length of time, we went by train, a special train always, and we were then sent round to South Wales. And the battery or regimental headquarters, I forget which.
You're on a new deployment now.
This was the same regiment, but the headquarters was in Neath, and my troop was stationed at two places. I think the first one was Jersey Marine, which was a...
Jersey?
Just like the island, Jersey Marine, two words, which was a bit of high ground, a sort of an isolated hill, I think, east of Swansea, close to the coast. And there, I remember next to nothing about the gun deployment.
So this was still November, was it?
Oh, I think it was probably earlier December. I really can't remember. All I do remember is that we were in that area at Christmas. And the weather was appalling most of the time. I seem to remember constant rain. And the one thing that I do remember, and this is relevant in a way, at Jersey Marine, was the visit of some civilian entertainers. And this was a thing that was regular all over the deployed troops in this country. There were marvelous little groups of volunteers. Some would sing, some would act, or do conjuring tricks, all sorts of just little forms of entertainment were extremely popular. And we would then probably gather in into a village hall or something like that. Most of the troops, you would leave probably a minimum detachment on each gun. Or possibly we even took the guns out of action after dark. This was always in the evening. This particularly, I remember, an exceedingly nice young married couple who came. I can't remember what they did, but they entertained us so well that we asked for them to come again, and they came and gave a second visit to us. And at some stage before Christmas, we were moved to a big night fighter aerodrome, Fairwood Common, which was on the Gower Peninsula, very much at the inland sort of Swansea end, where the RAF mess was at Clyne Castle, C-L-Y-N-E, to which we were invited about once, I think, the officers of our troop. Otherwise, again, we were in huts then, I think, and right on the edge of the airfield, and I can remember again, I remember very little about it, but I remember one night in pouring rain riding my motorbike right across the airfield to get back to the hut and almost running into the propeller of the night fighter, which was parked. I just avoided it at the last moment, standing there with its propeller blade hanging downwards. For the rest, again, I'm afraid next to nothing, except that after, Christmas was absolutely dismal. We weren't entertained in any way, as far as I remember. I was suddenly posted to a proper regiment.
Now, when's this? Just after Christmas?
I suppose early January by then, 43. And I suppose I was taken into Neath, to the headquarters, in order to be sent off. And I was put on the night sleeper train to Paddington, equipped with a half bottle of whiskey, and I had to go to join a regiment which was at Leon Sea, which is, you may know it, I was part of South End, more or less. And I remember, before catching an early morning train from Fenchurch Street, going and trying to shave dry in a telephone box to make myself respectable. And went down and reported, I suppose, to the battery headquarters.
Which battery? Which regiment?
It was the 133rd Light Anti-Aircraft Regiment, RA, and my battery was 444, Light Anti-Aircraft Battery. My regimental commander was a Lieutenant Colonel Powell, who was a bank manager from Stafford.
Powell?
Yes. And was not much of a commanding officer, I remember. He wasn't very highly thought of, and in fact he was pushed out after a time. And my battery commander was Peter Barnett, who was... He was in advertising. He worked for J. Walter Thompson before he was called up. He was a territorial, I think, and a keen weekend rugger player, I remember, an amusing fellow. And I remember lots more about that regiment, of course. They had just done their mobile training. Regiments that were considered had a future were built up, robbing the failing regiments, such as the one I'd been in, which was disbanded, I think, not very long afterwards. Anybody?
Now, why would it be? Why was it disbanded? Why was it failing? If we could.
It was just. Oh, it was. There were. It's all coming back. Yes. While we were at Fairwood Common, in fact, we had a field check. And this was War Office officers came down and did a detailed survey of the whole unit, in every way, questioning the gunners. We came out of it extremely badly, I remember. I can't remember exactly why now. And we were considered as a regiment to have failed. And so that's why we then became reinforcements for regiments, other regiments, which had made the grade all right, and were then, in turn, taken for mobile training.